This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. These days, it's not uncommon to see children as young as 3 or 4 playing games on an iPad at a restaurant while their parents enjoy a quiet meal. And it's also increasingly required that children use digital teaching tools at school. In fact, we take pride in developing technological literacy at an early age as a step toward future success. What most of us don't realize is that companies that make the software our children are exposed to are quietly gathering extraordinary amounts of behavioral data for marketing purposes. My guest is Faith Boninger. She is a research associate in education policy at the University of Colorado. She's the co-author of an annual report on schoolhouse commercialism for the National Education Policy Center's Commercialism in Education Research Unit. And her new book with Alex Molnar on the topic is called Sold Out: How Marketing in School Threatens Children's Well-Being and Undermines Their Education. Welcome to the program, Faith.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, I had long suspected that companies are doing this because if they do it to grown-ups, they're likely doing it to children. We know that our iPhones, for example, pick up a lot of data about where we move around. Our GPS gives away our location. Websites we visit are constantly collecting data on the sites that we look at and then advertising those things back to us. But I suppose I was a little shocked at the level to which our children are being studied. First of all, is the main sort of corporate surveillance, if you will, happening in play, sort of video games, or is it primarily in school materials and education materials, or both?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's really in both. And what we're concerned about especially is how children are exposed to it through their schools. So through educational technology, but also through schools and teachers sending kids online as part of their schoolwork, where they can be then surveilled.
So, of course, school is somewhere that children are required to be, to, you know, unless you have an exemption for homeschooling, but school is somewhere that's mandatory in this country. You have to send your child to school. And so if your child is at a school and teachers are requiring children to have digital mobile devices available to them or even laptops and are requiring them to download certain apps, are those teachers making sure that those apps are purely for educational purposes? Are they even looking out for, you know, data collection, if you will?
You know, it's possible, but I would say mostly not. Teachers are educators, you know, that they're there to educate. That's what they've learned how to do. And they're not privacy experts. So they're unlikely to be scouring the privacy policies of the various apps that they send children to. Schools and districts might be more likely to, but even then, it's still a problem.
Right. And it's not as though digital technology, digital availability, the internet, et cetera, is, you know, something that has spawned corporate surveillance and for marketing purposes, right? You point out in the annual report that you wrote recently that corporate attempts to study children's behavior in schools actually goes back many, many decades. Can you tell us a little bit about how it all started? And once upon a time, the government actually looked at this as a form of propaganda to children.
It used to be called propaganda. So the first documented situation that was noted was in the late 1800s. There was a hardware store that tried to get into schools. And it probably was going on before then, too. That's just the the oldest documented case. But in the 1920s, the National Education Association studied the phenomenon because it was so prevalent that companies were sending materials to schools. And then, you know, then they used the word propaganda. Now we call it sponsored educational materials, you know, materials that are educational, but that are produced by companies.
Now, are these all educational companies or are these other companies like hardware companies trying to basically say, we'll give you free materials for your kids, but of course their motive is ulterior?
There are other companies, and sometimes they'll have, I mean, there are companies that produce materials for other companies, you know, so Scholastic, for instance, of Scholastic Books, they have a unit that produces materials for other companies like Shell or the coal industry or Lexus.
And so the idea is, so it seems as though there's a twofold issue here. The idea is to basically shape children's perceptions towards either consumerism or looking at certain industries in a certain way, but then also collect data that can be used to then market to them. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it all starts with the desire to influence them, right? And that's actually how we started to study data privacy at all, is that our initial concern was with how companies were using schools to get at kids, to influence them to like certain products, to accept their worldviews, and so forth. But then it's really like a paradigm shift or a sea change in how effectively it can be done nowadays with data collection, because the data collection allows for more targeted marketing.
So give us some examples of what children are, say, required to do in schools today that ends up basically being a subversive effort by a corporation to study their behavior and market to them.
Oh, my goodness. So there are many different kinds of things. So McDonald's runs a whole bunch of different programs in order to get into schools, you know, so they'll send Ronald McDonald, and they'll have McTeacher nights that fundraise. So those are the kind of things that children would be participating in schools that would expose them to the company and the company worldview, and, you know, make them more positive toward the company. If you're talking about more specific digital things, a very, very popular means of exposure now is through Google Apps for Education. It reaches over 30 million children and educators and administrators worldwide. So it's very prevalent, and kids and educators love it. It's free to schools, and it provides all different kinds of software within the Google Apps for Education suite. So, you know, when I interview kids, they're very happy with it because they can use it from everywhere, and they can use it to collaborate on projects and so forth. What happens with the Google Apps, for instance, is that a child can be using, let's say, the word processing application to write a paper, let's say on a book that they were reading for English. And, you know, they'll be writing the paper, and then they'll go into search, and they'll look for some stuff in search, and then maybe they'll take a break, and they'll go onto YouTube, and, you know, maybe hit up Instagram. You know, the kids are constantly shifting and taking study breaks. You know, they'll go from one program to another. And when the child leaves the protected Google Apps for Education suite, then they're tracked.
So Google is tracking them while they're off Google, off Google Apps?
Yes, and that's been a source of contention. The Electronic Frontier Foundation submitted a complaint to the FTC about this, because they're concerned about that kind of tracking. And Google says that it's not doing anything that it's not supposed to do, because the specific applications that are part of the suite are protected. It's when the kids go out of the suite that they're not protected. So, as far as Google is concerned, they're not doing anything wrong. But as far as privacy advocates are concerned, they say, wait, stop. The kids are being tracked once they leave the particular Google Apps for Education suite.
Right.
And they do. They do all the time leave the suite.
Now, and of course, the efficacy of using these technological tools to actually facilitate real learning is the subject of intense debate among educators. In fact, a lot of research shows that it doesn't help children learn, but that's the topic of a whole nother conversation. Let's talk about the laws that you would think would be in place to protect children from this sort of digital surveillance. Are there laws in place? If so, are they just not being enforced? Are they simply not strong enough?
I would say that they're not strong enough. There have been, over the last several years, there's been more attention to the idea of privacy. And so there have been quite a few bills that have been proposed in state legislatures and in Congress. There were 8 bills in Congress in 2015-2016. Only one of them was actually enacted. Most of them don't make it from the bill stage to the law stage. And then there are issues with the bills themselves. I think the primary issue with the bills is that they focus on personally identifiable information. On the one hand, that's great. On the other hand, there's a lot of other information. Just that tracking, for instance, that we were talking about. If a child has a computer, their own that they use most of the time, or one that's given to them by their school, it doesn't matter who they are if their behavior is being tracked.
Right. Google doesn't care about their name necessarily. They just cares about tracking a particular individual who they can get data on and then use that data on that individual, right?
Yeah. Right. And it's not necessarily Google. It's also anybody else that's advertising through Google. But that's absolutely true. You know, you get mail to your name or resident, right? They don't care who resident is, they just want you to buy whatever they have to sell. And so a lot of the tracking is like that. Besides that, when you talk about anonymized data, a lot of data can be de-anonymized. Kids are more identifiable than you might think, and even if they're not identified, they're still a target.
So let's talk about the impacts to children, because, you know, people watching this interview might think, all right, so fine, it might make my child more likely to bug me to buy them this particular video game, but it's overall, you know, not that harmful to children. In my list of things to worry about for my child, this one has a low priority. But how does this harm children? How does this kind of data collection and marketing and basically, let's call it what it is, corporate propaganda in education, how does that really harm children?
That's an excellent question, and one that we've been really concerned about, because if it doesn't harm children, then so what, right? Because schools are getting free software, they're getting things that they can use. So if it doesn't harm them, you know, no big deal. But what we've realized over the years of working on this project is that advertising does actually present a threat to children, presents kind of specific threats that we can think about. And those are to the integrity of their education and to their psychological health and to their physical health.
You point out that in particular, food marketing has impacts to lifelong diseases like diabetes, also risk factors like obesity. I mean, if junk food companies like McDonald's are able to early on create a sort of loyalty among children, then those children are likely to gravitate towards junk food for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. And you know what? Foods are the most advertised class of products to children. And so that's a real concern. And, you know, McDonald's is a specific company that we can point to that we know is active in schools and with parent-teacher organizations and so forth. But something that bothers me almost even more is the more subtle propaganda. Like, you know, let's call it what it is. You know, where you've got organizations that are nonprofit organizations that are actively supported by corporations, and what they're trying to do is teach children a calories in, calories out kind of approach to food. That's really the mantra of the food industry.
Right, exactly. It doesn't matter what kind of calories. It could be, you know, high fructose corn syrup calories. As long as you just measure by calories, you'll be healthy. Right.
Exactly. And so what that does is, I mean, imagine a young child in school. If a teacher is teaching out of this playbook, it's kind of using the teacher's authority to teach the child that this is fact. you know, not teach the child that this is the opinion of the food industry, but rather it's fact.
And so this is very, you know, we should sort of make it really clear when corporations or nonprofits that are doing the, you know, business of corporations offer these free education materials, they're not really free. They're enacting a price from children. There would be no reason for these, you know, groups, these entities to offer free educational materials unless they were getting something out of it, right? I mean, that's something that educators, those people in charge of our children's education, need to be acutely aware of. But it seems like they, you know, not everybody is.
I would agree with you 100%.
So some of these companies have taken these, you know, voluntary privacy pledges. This is kind of a very popular thing in American culture, where if corporations are caught doing, you know, widespread harm, we like to rely on them to police themselves. But usually, of course, again, why? What would be their interest in really policing themselves? So what is the sort of goal for yourself to see this kind of insidious marketing to children? What's the end goal that you'd like to see? To simply strengthen the laws that hold corporations accountable?
Yes, that would be a fine thing to strengthen the laws, because when we rely on self-regulation, then it's up to the companies that sign pledges and so forth to police themselves, and there's no accountability. And so if you have a law that holds them accountable, then obviously there is accountability. So that would be a fine thing and something that we recommend. And laws that address the issues of, let's say, anonymized data possibly being re-anonymized and targeted marketing and all that kind of thing. And also laws that have language that don't allow companies to obey the letter of the law while still doing what they want to do, you know, because that's a problem with a lot of the bills that have come through. But also important is for parents and teachers and administrators to be aware of this issue and aware in a way that leads them to act, you know, to start to be very careful about and critique the kinds of contracts that schools get involved in and set up policies that make it so that teachers don't bring in software on their own, you know, software that could potentially have privacy problems. And they can then create a conversation around these issues and what could be done to protect children.
Right. And it's very important, of course, for parents, especially to have that kind of awareness to closely watch what their children are actually doing online and how their data is being collected. Faith, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post some links to your articles from our website so people can find out more about the work that you do. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Faith Boninger is a research associate in education policy at the University of Colorado, and she co-authors the annual report on schoolhouse commercialism for the National Education Policy Center's Commercialism in Education Research Unit. Her new book with Alex Molnar is called Sold Out: How Marketing in School Threatens Children's Well-Being and Undermines Their Education. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.